Stay up to date on the green and gold all off season. The Green and Gold Fix podcast is brought to you by Potawatomi Casino Hotel. Luxury stay, elite play, unwind in sophisticated comfort. Win big, dine, and experience the events in Milwaukee.
The 11 o'clock hour, Wilde and Tausch, 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee, 100.5 ESPN Madison, 1430 ESPN Beaver Dam, Wisconsin On Demand, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. No Jason Wilde today, or really all of this week. Jesse Nelson along with the Packers Hall of Famer Mark Tauscher. And it is our pleasure to now be joined, Tausch, by executive producer and analyst, NFL matchup, producer, NFL films, 44 years.
Yeah, I was fortunate to meet Greg out at the NFL broadcast boot camp. And I think for your money, if you really just want to cut the BS, what is on film, what he sees, he has no agenda. It's just about football with Greg Cosell.
And he joins us now on Wilde and Tausch. Greg, thanks so much for making your annual visit to Wilde and Tausch here. 44 years is a long time to be doing one gig. What's been the biggest change in anything that you've seen in those 44 years? Maybe that's a loaded question.
I'm not as quick as I used to be, you know?
Who is? I don't know if anybody is.
I can't go up and jam it anymore, you know? That's the change, you know?
That's amazing. Greg Cosell, thanks so much for taking the time and joining us here this morning. Of course, there's a ton we want to get into about the Green Bay Packers.
You know, Jesse, it's funny. Just before we start, just listening to the way you let in, you know, it's so funny because all I do basically 12 months out of the year, I'm actually doing it right now, is just watch tape. And it's so funny when I see on Twitter when people say, well, that's an interesting take. And I think to myself, I don't really do takes. I do film, mm-hmm. You know, and I always think to myself, people who don't watch film, they do takes. People who watch film don't do takes.
Well, Jesse,
and I think Mark would agree with that, having, you know, played at a really high level for a long time. You know, when you're watching the film, Mark, and the coach is commenting, he's not doing a take.
No.
You know,
he's making an observation off of what he's seeing. Jesse is a take guy. He doesn't watch any film, and he just gives takes,
which is the way to do it. This is when Tausch tries to walk the fine line of being an analyst versus being a journalist versus being a media member.
So, Greg, you do watch more tape than anybody, and you do a great job of illustrating what you see. What did you see from the beginning of the Jordan Love era, which was up and down? What were the biggest reasons we saw him really? I'm going to give a take here. I think he was one of the best quarterbacks the back half of last season. What he was able to do, the throws that he made, the consistency that he played with. What was the difference last year?
I got two answers to that because I actually watched a ton of Jordan Love a couple of weeks ago because that's what I kind of do in the off season. I go back and rewatch a lot of things because during the season I can't watch, you know, let's say 250 dropbacks in a row, you know, because I'm going week to week. In the off season I can do that. But I'm going to start by saying I think Jordan Love is one of the three or four most gifted quarterbacks in the league in terms of pure physical talent. But I think there's two things that really showed up to me, and there may be more, you know, coaches who really, you know, that work with him know him better than I. But just watching the tape, I thought there were two things from a developmental standpoint that stood out. I thought he showed a much better calculated pre-snap understanding, recognizing defenses, understanding how to use his cadence. And I think there was probably no better snapshot of that than the touchdown he threw to Wicks against the Cowboys in the playoff game. I also thought that there's another great example of that, too, just understanding what he was looking at pre-snap. He threw a touchdown. I think it might have been, was it week 18? It was against the Vikings late in the season. Was that week 17 or somewhere around there?
Week 17, that would have been, yeah.
Yeah, where he threw a touchdown to Reed, and the Vikings changed their coverage. They had late coverage rotation, and he read it instantaneously, and he hit Reed on the seam versus what became cover two. But the second point I wanted to make was he just became a better processor and decision maker from the pocket. He saw things more cleanly. He saw things more quickly. Because that's ultimately, you know, what you're trying to do as a quarterback is you're trying to win pre-snap, which is not going to happen all the time, obviously. There's a defense out there. But you're trying to get as much information as you can pre-snap so that as you're dropping back, because all that happens really fast, as Mark can attest, you're not thinking it through. It just intuitively happens. And he got much better at that.
So how do you measure decisiveness, Greg? Like you just mentioned a little bit of what you look for, but it seems like something that's more of a generic term when you say, well, this quarterback's not doing it. He's not decisive. What is it that stands out to you when you're watching, you know, week two, week three Jordan Love versus week 17 and 18, and you say clearly he's being more decisive in the pocket?
Yeah, well, decisiveness is not a, I mean, not to knock you, Jesse, but it's not a generic term and it's not an intangible. You can see based on route concept versus coverage where the ball should go. And when in the NFL, if you're just half a millisecond late, you're late. And then a quarterback can either throw it late, in which there'll be a problem, or doesn't throw it at all, and then something else happens. So when you're really seeing it the right way, the route concept versus the coverage, the ball comes out when it's supposed to come out.
So, Greg, how impressed have you been with what Matt LaFleur has been able to do? He obviously got off to this great start with Aaron Rodgers, most winning coach in the regular season in the history of the NFL. And I think last year was his best year because of all the circumstances, all the young wideouts, the young tight ends, and obviously Jordan Love is a first-year starter. Yeah. What did you see from him schematically to help Jordan?
Well, number one, I thought that one thing that really helped later in the season was obviously LaFleur, with his background, believes in the run game. And there was that stretch where Aaron Jones, who's obviously not there anymore, but I think he had five or six games in a row with 20-plus carries and over 100 yards. And I think that that's a big factor as well, because I think that every offense, to me, works better when – I don't want to use the generic term balance, but I guess the way to describe that is that you can attack the defense in multiple ways. You're not relying just on one way to attack a defense. I think as the season progressed, and maybe this was a thing that Love got more comfortable with as well, I think you saw more motion within the context of their offense. They started to use Jaden Reed as a motion receiver. I think other receivers started to become factors. He probably got a better feel for what they did. Wicks became a really good receiver between the numbers. He's a big body with good hands. So I think that as players developed and LaFleur and the coaching staff saw what their strengths were, they were better able to deploy them in specific ways given what they saw as their strengths.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, joining us here on Wilde and Tausch. Jesse and Tausch today with Jason Wilde on assignment for the week. I'm glad you brought up the receivers, Greg. I definitely wanted to ask you about those guys because we've had a conversation for about a month now here this offseason about the ensemble cast of Packers wide receivers. It feels like there may not be a true number one, but when you watch the tape, do you see any of these potential receivers emerging as a number one, that they could take the leap here in year two or year three for many of them?
Well, I guess the two guys that stood out to me, as I said, I probably watched 250, 300 dropbacks. I thought as the year progressed, Reed and Wicks were the guys that stood out to me. Now, Reed it may not be a number one in a strict sense. Obviously, he's more of a slot, but they used him as a motion receiver as the year progressed. He was the most targeted third down receiver, so clearly they felt that he had tremendous value there. And I thought Wicks, again, you know, you start getting into what's a number one. There's different kinds of number ones. And there's only four or five guys in the league that are truly, you know, in a sense, transcendent number ones. So where do other guys fit? You know, that you start getting into that question. So Wicks is certainly not that guy. But I remember watching Wicks his next to last year in college at Virginia, because the last year the whole offense fell apart in college. And I thought Wicks was a big-time prospect based on his second to last year in college. And then obviously it didn't work the last year. But, you know, he's a big body. Can he be the boundary X? They used Dobbs mostly in that role last year as the single receiver to the short side of the field. I don't know. Maybe Wicks might be the better guy for that as he continues to develop.
Greg, did you... I just was listening to Cowherd with Tom Brady on, and I thought it was just fascinating talking about, you mentioned there's only four or five bona fide number one wideouts. Green Bay at this point does not have that. Do you think that's an advantage? Because just listening to Tom talking about having to make sure when it was Randy Moss, finding ways to get them the football. Which way, if you were a head coach, which way would you want to go with that?
Well, look, I think if you have an opportunity to have Justin Jefferson, you're not going to say, nah, we don't need a number one. Look, you'd always rather have great players than not great players. The question is, as a coach and as a quarterback, how do you deal with it? And again, then it depends upon the personality of the player as well. Mark, I think you'd agree, you'd always rather have a great player than not a great player.
Yep.
I'm sure Matt LaFleur would probably agree with that as well. I guess the key then for a play caller and for a quarterback, because the quarterback's the one who's walking up to the line of scrimmage and staring at the defense, during the game, and particularly early in a game where you may get what you anticipated or you may not, I guess then it depends on how you deal with it in that moment. And then you know the personality of the player, of the great receiver. Some guys, start to whine. We know that. Some guys don't. So you have to know all that. But I think you'd always rather have the great guy as opposed to not the great guy.
I don't think anybody could disagree with that. I think if Justin Jefferson's available, you want him on your football team. So flipping over to the other side of the ball on defense, and it has been the last couple seasons, it's always Joe Barry's defense. It plays too soft. They go halfway from a head coach from Boston College comes, and it's all the talk this offseason here in Green Bay has been about the aggressive nature that you're going to play. What are you expecting to see, and what did you see last year with maybe some of the breakdowns, especially in that Carolina game when Carolina couldn't move the ball against anybody and they go in the fourth quarter? What did you see from Joe Barry's defense that left you, I guess, maybe wanting more?
Well, I mean, maybe it's better to talk about what we think we might get now, because obviously it's a whole different deal. Mm-hmm. The past is now the past.
It's true.
And obviously they addressed their defense early in the draft. I mean, that was a major deal. Obviously they did draft the tackle, or who I guess is going to be a guard, Jordan Morgan, and probably just should be a guard because of the arm length issue. But, they did draft in the second round Cooper from A&M, who was the most explosive linebacker in this draft class. They drafted Bullard out of Georgia, who is a really intriguing player. His junior year, his second to last year, he played slot corner. Last year, he played safety. He's a really savvy, smart player. My guess is he'll play safety. They signed Xavier McKinney, who's a really multidimensional player at safety. I think they have a lot more options now with their players. Because someone like Cooper, for instance, you talk about Halfley being aggressive, and that's the talk. Cooper was a great blitzer at A&M last year. He's an explosive guy. So they're looking for more explosiveness, I think, on the defensive side of the ball. We'll see how it all plays out. I think that there are certain players that stood out to me on tape last year. I thought Carl Brooks, who was a sixth-round pick,
yes,
kind of an unknown quantity, he really stood out on tape. So you have to figure he'll improve. I think they expect Van Ness to be able to win one-on-one, whether it's on the edge or inside. Now, this will be a different-looking defense, so we'll see where he plays the majority of his snaps. I'm sure they're expecting Wyatt, who was a first-round pick 2 years ago, to become much more of a force as a pass rusher. In an ideal world, you'd love to be able to pressure with four, because defense is a numbers game. If you have seven in coverage, you have an advantage. If you can get there with four and impact the quarterback, that's what you want. If you can't, you've got to bring a fifth, and then that limits your options in coverage.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, joining us on Wilde and Tausch. Xavier McKinney, we know he's good coming in. You mentioned multidimensional. What makes Xavier McKinney so good?
Well, McKinney can play on the back end. He can play in the box. He can even line up in the slot at times. He did that a ton at Alabama, and he showed he could do it well. So he can do a lot of different things, as can Bullard, by the way. So now you have two safeties. Assuming Bullard ends up starting, you never know with a rookie. My guess is they drafted him to be a starter. So as we talk now in mid to late June, I would assume they'd like McKinney and Bullard to be their starting safeties. They actually drafted another interesting safety in the fifth round, Oladapo from Oregon State. He's a pretty interesting player, too. But but I think they'd like McKinney and Buller to be the starters. And now you have versatility at the safety position. Every team would like interchangeable safeties, safeties that can do multiple things, be multidimensional in how they're deployed. So I think they have two guys like that, and that really adds options to your defense.
What about Quay Walker? You know, how have you assessed his play up to this point, and what do you expect, or what do you think Green Bay is going to be looking for from him? Because I think fans are kind of saying this defense is going to let him showcase what we saw at Georgia, maybe a little bit more than what we've seen in Green Bay so far.
Yeah, and I think that's critical here. You're right, because Walker's got a ton of physical traits, but hasn't quite been a consistent impact player in his first 2 years in the league. But it's all there within his body. So, again, I don't know what Jeff is going to do exactly, but I think that Walker is, he's a guy to really keep an eye on, because physically and athletically, he should be a really good player. He should be somewhat of an impact player, you know, as much as a stacked backer can be that guy. But again, he can be deployed in certain ways to help in that regard. And I think he's one guy to really look at as this new defense gets installed. And, you know, we see how it goes through training camp and into the early part of the season.
Yeah, I also, your Carl Brooks observation, limited amount of snaps and just showed up all over the place.
Yeah, he was really, really good. And I didn't know much. I did not do him coming out of college. Was it Bowling Green? I know he's a smaller college guy, not a Power 5 guy. And I did not do him coming out. He was one of the guys I missed. So when I was watching the Packer D last year and I kept noticing him, I was like, who is this guy? But he showed up every week.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of excitement for Carl Brooks. All right, Greg, before we let you go, I think one of the things this offseason that's been kind of under the radar is this new kickoff rule. And I was fascinated to hear Kansas City thinking about not having Butker do the kickoffs because of the tackling. What do you make as you're watching all this? And does it feel like they just kind of threw this all together? And is that a spot where I feel like a team can really kind of be proactive and make some big moves? Or do you think people are just going to kick it out of the end zone and put it to the 30? What do you think the strategy is going to be league-wide?
You know, I'm so bad that with all the work I do, you know, I'm just not a special teams guy. I don't have time for it, unfortunately. But I think that it will become a factor. Now, if it becomes a really big factor, teams will kick it out of the end zone. You know, because obviously if it starts becoming a big factor and teams, you know, move the ball up to the 40 or 45-yard line, that's not where defenses want offenses to start. So I don't think we know how this is going to play out yet. My guess is if special teams coaches were being honest, they would probably tell you they're not sure either until they see how it plays out. So I'm not sure what the impact will be, but there will be an impact. I haven't studied it. I don't know all the nuances of it.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, joining us on Wilde and Tausch. Greg, what do the Packers get in Josh Jacobs as part of the offense this year that they didn't have with Aaron Jones, or that's different from the years past of Aaron Jones?
Well, Jacobs is a little more physical kind of runner. Jones is a little juicier in terms of how, you know, the speed, the quickness. Jones is also, as you guys know, because he's been there for a while, gives you a little more in the receiving game because you can detach him. Not that you can never detach Jacobs, but Jacobs is kind of a more physical grinding type player. And, you know, he's probably more of a true sustainer than Jones. So obviously, you need him to stay healthy. He's got some tread on his tires. He's carried a good amount the last couple of years. But, you know, he's truly a feature back. He's a foundation back. So, and we know that LaFleur still wants to sort of start his offense. As good as Jordan Love is, he wants the run game to be a major factor.
Greg Cosell, your insight is so incredible. Do you have a lair that you watch all this film in, or a lab? Like, where do you watch all this stuff?
I'm just sitting in my office right now at NFL Films, you know, but there's no windows, you know, that's the thing, so there's no windows.
You get in at like 5 and leave at like 10 p.m. to digest all this stuff? This is just amazing.
It's the off season, but I'm an early guy. I'm usually in the office by 5:30, quarter to 6 all the time. But now that it's the off season, you know, I usually like leave at 4 to go to the gym or something like that, which, you know, during the season is hard for me to do.
So, Greg, before we let you go, the way that the Packers season, and I know you're not in the prognostication game, you just watched the tape, but what were you surprised at the amount of growth that this team that was obviously in a rebuild mode with a young quarterback and all that youth, were you surprised that they came together so quickly and really had a great chance to win a championship with a lead in San Fran? Were you shocked by what you saw from this team last year?
I wouldn't say I'm never shocked, but I was surprised because you had a first-year starting quarterback. You had two second-year receivers and, what, four first-year receivers that got a lot of time?
Yep.
That's a true rarity in the league, and I think that speaks to the coaching staff. It speaks to the quarterback. It speaks to the players. That's really hard to do, and we haven't even spoken about the tight ends. They had two rookie tight ends as well, and you know, Musgrave, I think, has really big-time talent. He could turn out to be a really good player. So you just don't see that in the league, hardly ever. Very, very impressive. But, you know, it's funny. Somebody replayed what I said on a show years ago after I watched Jordan Love, not his last year in college, but his next to last year. Because his last year, they changed coaching staffs. He was clearly an uncomfortable player. But after his second to last year in college, I said that this guy had really high-level traits. And, you know, he got the chance to start last year, and it really started to show up. And like I said, he's a top three or four quarterback in the league just in terms of physical traits.
That's great things to hear as a Packer fan. Greg, we really appreciate your time always and all of your insights, and have a great rest of your summer.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much.
Our treat. Greg Cosell joining us on Wildy and Tash.
You know, there's so many people that do this for a living that just kind of whatever. He grinds and puts in the work, and that's why his opinion is so valued by everybody. And it's no question that the big takeaway from this is top three or four, and that's not coming from me or you. It's coming from somebody that knows what the heck they're talking about, even more so, because they grind on that film, and they're not a part of it. That pretty good stuff. I think as a Packer fan, you can come away thinking we're in pretty good shape.
I'll have a Coors Light to that.
You should have a Coors Light. Brew the three-step cold process, cold lager, cold filtered, and it is cold packaged, so it's made to chill. Born in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado in 1978, Coors Light's refreshing. It's crisp. Only 102 calories. Sober responsibly, Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Jordan Love, a top three or four talent in the National Football League.
He's seeing the Carl Brooks thing, man. I'm telling you, there's a stock you want to get in on. That's your potential NVIDIA, if you will. Do you know what I'm talking about? NVIDIA, it's a big...
I don't.
Okay, good stuff.
Yeah, I got you, man.
I wish I would have known that 10 years ago.
Let's just play that Jordan Love commentary over and over and over for the rest of the show, because I want to inject that into myself. Let's hear what Greg Cosell had to say, some of our big takeaways from the conversation. That was awesome, and we'll do it next. It's Wildy and Tausch.